Now, turning our attention to the issue that is acutely affecting the county at the moment. In a way, you could say that at this time of year, it gets intensely busy in our health service in the county with so many extra people and so many tourists here. But this year, it's unusually busy, even again, a tripling of the presentations across the country at emergency departments right across the country, including here in University Hospital Kerry in Tralee. I spoke yesterday with Deputy Michael Healy-Ray about what he was hearing on the ground in the hospital, hearing from people who had gone through, hearing from people working in the system. And we were trying to get to the nub of the issue of what needs to be done to try and turn the enormous tanker that is our health service travelling on the seas around. It's a difficult, complex issue. There are multifactorial systems as are differences and issues as to why this is all happening. But at the face of it all, I suppose, is the experience of the person who goes through the doors of the emergency service. With me in our studio this morning, I've got Breda Joy, journalist, of course, of many years, and author, journalist with the Kerry's Eye. She is with me in our Clarence studio. Breda, good morning to you. Thanks for coming into us.
Good morning, Gerry, and thanks for this opportunity.
Now, your father is 88 and had to go into the emergency department of UHK. Tell me about what it was like for him and for you looking after him there.
I just want to preface his experience by saying that the reason I'm sitting in the chair here in front of you is that when my brother subsequently went into casualties to spend time with him, a nurse said to my brother, look, if you have no anybody with any political influence, would you try and highlight the terrible conditions we're working under? And we'll all toot our horns in the car if we pass the nurses when they're driven to going out in the street. And from my experience in casualty or the emergency department on Wednesday, I just felt so strongly that we have to get behind the medical staff and trying to improve their conditions, because the knock-on effect is the kind of experience that people, vulnerable people like my father, experienced on Wednesday. So basically what happened was he'd been developing jaundice over the weekend, and there are other issues I won't go into.
Sure.
But the GP told us to go in because he was approaching a stage where if we didn't get it treated, it could be dangerous. So we got in at 2:20 p.m. We sat down, and one of the pluses is, I've been in there a lot now with elderly relatives, one of the pluses I've seen is there are a lot more wheelchairs now. So at least you can put an elderly person sitting on something like that compared to those hard chairs where they've sat in the past. But basically we got in at 20 past two. My father was terribly weak, and it was 20 past 10 that night, 8 hours before he actually got into the inner part and got onto a trolley. And what I'd like to say is, if they had given him a 6-foot plank with a pillow that time, he would have been delighted just to lie down, having had to sit
for eight hours
at his age in the weak state that he was in. And I saw a lot in there, and I took notice of it. Just as we arrived in, a man came up and he said, I've been here since 9 o'clock. I wonder, is there any point in waiting? Now, I must say, everybody was unfailingly polite, but I was there between 2 and 10, which I'd probably call the Disney hours. There was no drunk people, no drugs problems coming in. So everybody that went up to those desks were to make inquiries. There's two desks, just they were really, really good. And then shortly after that man, another man came up and he said, I just want to see, just want to make sure I didn't get missed. I had an x-ray this morning and I'm still waiting for the doctor.
And the doctor to tell you what's wrong.
Yeah. So I was on a learning experience in the sense that I rationed myself. I went up about every hour to ask, point to my father. It was obvious how yellow he was and everything.
How stressed he was, yeah.
Yeah, but I went up, there was the first guy that I dealt with, he was on till 8 o'clock, and I went up 3 times to him, you know, between the 2:30. But, and the second and third time, the second time I went looking for a bedspread because my father was cold, you know. Yeah. Obviously with the COVID, it's great to have the fresh air coming in, but he was cold. But I could see your man's face dropping every time I went up. So, like, it is very hard for them
to deal with as well. Yeah.
But I learned then, just from asking things, that there's no point in asking where you are in the queue, you know, how many people are ahead of you. I was only going up so that we wouldn't be forgotten.
And that's the stress of a lot, like the man that you met.
Yeah.
You're sitting there, you're waiting, and the longer you're waiting, the more you're worried, oh my God, have I been forgotten?
Yes.
And that adds to the hassle and the stress of being there for that length of time.
And it does happen to people. It does happen to people. So then... I did learn, and I was asking, you know, how many are ahead of us. But that turns out to be a useless question, because when the ambulances come in with the people directly, if there were four ahead of you, there could be now six ahead of you an hour later. But on average, they said they deal with, I heard, either four patients an hour or maybe one patient every 20 minutes. So, you know, and I know the system. I didn't think we were going to trot in after a couple of hours. I knew we were in for the long haul. But a question I have after it, and maybe the people in the know will tell me that why it can't happen. I think, why can't the elderly people who are weak... some people are fine and strong, but then again, they're not going to be in casualty if they're in top notch. But why can't they be brought in and put lying down while they're waiting for the doctor? Like, why do they have to sit outside there, you know, for that amount of time?
Yeah.
That's just one question I have for the system. But so we were there in the great cloud of unknowing. I'd say 10 or 12, maybe more, people in that 8-hour stretch, their names were called out. They weren't there. They were gone. And
these are people who probably had been waiting hours and hours and had left in despair
They just took off. And I, the comedian, and maybe when you're trying to make the best of it, I was thinking, will we pretend
that we're somebody else? Yeah.
Will we go in and stay inside? And just another note of comedy, a woman I was talking to said she'd been there the previous night. She was back a second night with her child. And she said this man beside her fell down on the floor and was writhing on the floor. And next thing, I don't know who came. Was it security? Was it a medical person? And they said, that didn't work last night. It's not going to work
tonight.
My God,
that's the length people are going to.
It's desperate measures.
Yeah.
So at 9:20 p.m., the nurse in charge came out and she stood at the top of the casualty. Now, somebody told me that this happens. I had never seen it before, and I've been in there about 5 times in 5 years. And she basically said there were 80 patients inside in the trolley zone, we'll call it that. She said there was 3 ambulances waiting, and she thought at that stage they would be down to 2 doctors for the night, and they only had 3 trolleys at that stage of the evening. So she stressed that they didn't have the staff or the resources
to meet the demand of the expecting people in the area you were in.
Yeah, or the people inside.
Yes, yeah. But even in the area you were in waiting to get into the trolley zone.
Yeah, she said there'd be long delays. Now, she also said that if you are here, you know, and there is something seriously wrong with you, your GP has sent you here, don't leave, right? And she stressed that. But the subtext was that, and I can't judge anybody who was sitting there, there were people in there that needn't be there, you know? And I know that's one issue with it, but I can't judge, you know. I can't imagine.
You're not a triage nurse.
Yeah,
you don't know exactly the levels of emergency or not, but there is a situation clearly that there are too many people going in there for reasons that they don't need to be in there, and or for reasons that they're forced to go in there because there's nothing else to deal with the problems or the issues or the tests that are needed or the appointments that are needed on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why. So she was coming out to give a state of the nation, this is how we're looking for tonight.
Yeah, and that was brilliant because we knew how it was. So I was left with the position, will I wait and try and get my father in? Will he see any doctor tonight? To this day, I don't know whether he saw a doctor. He went in, he was settled in, let's say, at 20 past 10 on Wednesday night. All day yesterday, Thursday, up to about, I suppose, 8:30 last night when my brother left, he was on the trolley.
In the trolley zone, shall we say.
And like, I'm humorous, but I was standing there at about 10. I didn't want to be there inside there, but I wanted to see a nurse before I left, lift him on his own to brief her. And I was watching out for a nurse, and I could see around the corner there was a nurse dealing with an elderly woman. I don't know, was she doing an ECG or blood pressure or what? And obviously the woman was being tended to medically, but she went off then. And before I left, that woman was either moaning or crying, you know, there on the trolley on her own, which I think is just
terrible.
Terrible. So I went off and I left my father there to give a few positive things. There were people coming in trauma into the emergency department. Like, a man came in with a child howling in his arms, and they got priority and they got in. And there were lots of people, you know, in bad states getting into the inside. But, like, there were the nurses inside. And if, like, the nurse in charge says they don't have enough staff, they don't have enough resources, like, how are they going to get around to 80 people, you know, during the night?
And you've mentioned the ambulance side of it. They're affecting the flow of patients and the priority.
Yeah.
Those ambulances, because of the lack of resources, the lack of either trolleys in the area or subsequently in the rest of the hospital, beds, or then you go on one step down facilities in the communities to free up the beds, which would then free up the trolleys. Those ambulances have to wait hours to let people in.
Yeah.
So they're waiting, you're waiting. It's a knock-on effect. Mm-hmm. And then people on the outside who have real emergencies or are in pain because of an accident are consequently waiting hours as well. So it underlines how broken the system is at the moment.
Yeah, a friend said to me, I know, was it last year, I told him to write about it and he didn't. He was over there and there was a backup of I don't know how many ambulances outside waiting to come into it. Now, I know there isn't a quick fix, but I was trying to think of practical things they could
do. I'm going to hold you there, Breda. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break because I want to get to the idea of, or at least some discussion on, what can be done, if anything can be done, with this continually vexed problem of our health service and access to our emergency departments. We'll get to that with Breda Joy after we take these. My daughter went through an experience at University Hospital Kerry Emergency Department. One, I suppose, probably has been replicated through all the emergency departments in the country at the moment, who are under, even saying it, unprecedented pressure. Breda, you were talking there, I suppose, about some ideas, but also you heard from a nurse as well at the ED.
I know a senior nurse there, and when I was coming on, I just asked her to give the viewpoint of the nurse, even though I think the nurse in charge there gave a great account of it. But basically, she said the system is under ferocious pressure. She mentioned lack of beds, staffing problems, and the complex elderly patient that takes so much care. It's just never ending, she said. This is summertime. I don't know what it'll be like in the winter. So, like, this is the time that they should be trying to put in some things. Now, just practically speaking, from the fact that I knew at the end of the night there was a 9-hour wait, I just felt if there was something like an electronic board inside in the emergency department giving the number of patients that are waiting, the approximate waiting time, if it is 9 hours, and if there was a third thing now, if they, the waiting time and I can't think of the third thing, so I'll just leave it. But if the information was up there so that people could know. And the other thing then is, if there are people near the hospital, I was just wondering, was there some system that they could be given a number or their number taken? I know this all comes down to staffing, that we could have driven back to Killarney and my father could have lain in his own bed for 8 hours and come back inside. You know, if there was something to make it easier for the people that are waiting inside there. And then, like, I suppose the HSC isn't known for reacting quickly to things. Now, I did point out the wheelchairs are a big improvement, but when I came in, there were no wheelchairs there, and the security man told me to ask at the desk, and there was nobody waiting, so I shot straight to the desk, then realised afterwards the receptionist was talking to somebody.
Yeah.
So she said, please get behind the line. and this is only a small thing, I couldn't find the line. I didn't know what she was talking about. And there's a curve, a red curve, with please stand behind the line, way to the left of your passage as you come in. There was a wheelchair over it and a person there. So why don't they put a big red line straight across your passage, and then that's going to...
Yeah.
Take so, Bridie, unfortunately,
we're out of time, yeah. But you're talking about simple, practical communication solutions. In the meantime, yes. To lessen the burden,
yeah.
The wider question, the bigger question, and Dr. Chris Luke is writing about this in the Irish Medical Times today about what needs to be done to solve the problems. And again, they're not easy, and they're going to take time. But that those small things need to be done to lessen the stress and lessen the burden of people going through, because it is going to continue as is for quite some time.
And lessen the stress on people at reception, that they don't have people like me coming up every hour asking what's the story.
In the reasonable way that you do, let alone the person at 2 o'clock in the morning who's getting angry and vexed and all of the stress that adds to that situation. You know?
So it's up to us, the people, to make our voices heard. I keep hearing about the survey on the radio, if you've been in a public hospital in the last 12 months. Look, do the survey and talk to your politicians. And, you know, like, we can't go on accepting unacceptable conditions.
Yeah, and that's what they are at the moment. Bridie, listen, thanks so much for talking to us about that and telling us your story and putting a picture for us on what it's like at the moment. If you have your own story or your view on what Bridie said, we want to hear from you on the programme.